VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We didn't do that. We hired based upon your ability to work in a doctor's office, and it failed miserably multiple times until I finally said, you know what, let's stop hiring based upon resumes and let's start hiring people based upon who they are and their fit to the type of business that we run. We'll teach them the rest. And that's when we finally hit the right. And when you had those people, you didn't have to hire anybody else because they knew what the hell they were doing. And they were structured and they were on pace. I had two office staff and I had a medical assistant, a doctor, and myself. That's it.
Welcome to Think Business with Tyler, sharing our methods and strategies for success. Join in on our conversations with business owners as we highlight their triumphs and detail how they overcame the challenges they faced while continuing to grow and scale their business. It's time to think life, think success, and think business with your host, Tyler Martin.
Hey there, fellow business enthusiasts. Pull up a chair and get ready for another inspiring conversation on Think Business with Tyler. Today, we're diving into the world of healthcare entrepreneurship with Daniel Tribby. From cash flow crises to crafting a thriving practice amidst a pandemic, Daniel's journey is a masterclass in resilience and innovation. So grab your notebook. You won't want to miss these game-changing insights. Let's get started. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the Think Business with Tyler podcast show. How's it going today?
I am great, Tyler. Thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Hey, so you're just always love to find out a little bit about you personally. Mm-hmm. I know you're located in Florida, which is a great place to be. I'm on the other side of the United States. Could you share a little bit about yourself just in terms of both professionally? And then I'd love if you'd share something about yourself personally, too.
Yeah, sure. This feels a little job interviewy. So what are the three things I have prepared to share with you? So I think probably normally this question for me, I just, you know, the top three things that if you want to get to know me as a person or a professional, the first one is I'm a growth guy. I love to read books. I love to listen to podcasts, do podcasts. I've hosted my own podcast, take the seminars, do the workshops. You know, I'm a growth related guy. So if I can learn it and apply it, then let's get after it. I'm a problem solver. Anybody who's ever worked with me in business can tell you that do not bring me problems. Bring me solutions relative to an issue that you feel like we could gain some ground on. So I'm definitely a solutions guy. And then on a personal level, I'm an adventurous. I ride motorcycles. I scuba dive. I'm tattooed. I have a 12-year-old son that loves baseball. So I do all the crazy stuff with him. So yeah, I'm a kind of a fun-loving type of creature, if you will.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Your child with baseball, that sounds like a blast, especially as we go into a new season right now. Hey, you mentioned books and podcasts. Since you brought that up, anything off the top of your head as related to growth that are your favorites, whether it be a podcast or a book, anything stand out for you?
So I punish on average about 30 books a year. I write their on my,
oh my gosh,
my wall right here. So what are ones that I've read? So I read Scrum recently, which I've read before, which is a Jeff Sutherland, JJ Sutherland, you know, kind of a organization. Are you familiar with Scrum?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
So I would say for any of you out there looking to get better organizational skills and better timeliness for achieving projects, so you're moving along your business journey, it's a great book. You can find a Scrum Master or learn it yourself, but it's a great, great way of increasing your productivity, as well as having some transparency for your entire team. I feel like a lot of business owners, we try to keep everything close to vest, which is totally unnecessary. Let your team know what's going on. Make them part of the process. And Scrum teaches you some valuable stuff there. So definitely say that one. And then I did Sandler Selling Method again, which is what is the name of the book? You can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar. So if sales is often the number one trait that most entrepreneurs need to harness, right? So if you're looking for a good way to be a salesperson without feeling salesy, right, and you want to approach sales as a service, I definitely recommend that Sandler Selling Method as a must read for sure.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. I bridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com. I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
So if you're looking for a good way to be a salesperson without feeling salesy, right? And you want to approach sales as a service, I definitely recommend that Sandler selling method as a must read for sure.
Yeah, that's a great one. Hey, you just brought up about sharing things with your staff and making them part of it or including them in the process. Where is that line, like, in your opinion? How much are you open to sharing versus how much do you keep close to the vest? Where do you feel that line's at?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot that I try to keep close in. I want my team to have ideas and I want them to feel free with their ideas. There's nothing worse than getting into a meeting with your group and you, as the leader, you just want everybody to agree with what you're saying, regardless if what you're saying is the appropriate thing or not. So I think the more transparency that you have, whether it's financials or marketing plans or future outlooks or new products, new services you want to bring in, the more transparency you have, the more feedback and buy-in that you get from your teams. I think that, you know, you got to consider the size of the business, right? If you're a $1 to $2 million type of business, you probably only have, you know, 4, 5, 6 people, maybe. So it's a little easier to be intimate. You're a $20 million business, you probably have got different levels, right? So you might want to pick and choose who you're sharing that information with. But I feel like the people who work with you that initially came into your business, right? The people that you hired from the beginning, you had an idea, it took off. Those people need face-to-face time with you as a person, like with your ideas, your strategies, your thoughts, the financials, all of those things. I think they need that one-on-one touch with you more so than probably the outliers do that, you know, but you want your inner circle to know what's going on, right? You want them to have some transparency in your business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I want to kind of get into your story. Your background is in the healthcare industry, mm-hmm. and I want to get clarity. What made you decide to be an entrepreneur in that industry? How does that story play out?
Probably the way that most of us do. We get fed up and tired of the way somebody else was doing it, and you thought you could do it better. So you went and built it and you did it better. This is pretty the overarching story. I was working for a large corporation almost for 10 years. I got tired of the quantity over quality type of feeling that is healthcare. I mean, think about it. You go to the doctor, you might as well burn half of your day, right? You're going to sit there and wait to be seen for 5 minutes just to be shuttled out the door. And the employees feel that as well. They feel like they're just there to be part of that conveyor belt. And no matter how well we did as a clinic, we were still got the pat on the back and said, good job. How much more can you do? Right. And so it was just such a quantity driven wheel. And I got tired of it. So I stepped out. I dabbled in medical sales for a little bit and had some great success there. And unfortunately, the group that I was working with, we got in bed with a bad business partner. So it washed the business. But because I had been such a part of the initial startup and growth process, I had all the contracts with all the vendors. So I was like, can I just do this myself? And so that was my first business, you know, more than 10 years ago. I just was like, can I do this on my own? Called all the vendors, got all the contracts, started up an LLC and did 6 figures in like 8 months worth of time. So like that was my first touch point. And I was like, I'm never going to work for anybody else again if I don't ever have to, you know? And so that kind of started me on the trajectory. And when I had the opportunity to open my own healthcare practice, which I said I was never going back to healthcare either. And somehow I ended up back in there again. But we opened a practice that stood for quality of patient care and quality of outcome. And that was the most important thing. It's the reason why I couldn't continue working in the healthcare environment was because there was so much quantity over quality. So if I was going to build something, we were going to build it from a quality perspective. And so we did.
So a couple questions. First one, you mentioned bad business partner. Without naming names, of course, is there any takeaways? Like when you reflect back on taking on a bad business partner, were there any red flags there? Or is there anything that you take away from like, now I know what to look for, or this is what I wouldn't do other than just avoiding business partner altogether?
Yeah, I think at the time, of course, it wasn't my business partner. I was just part of the startup. So the guy that I worked for, it was his partner.
Sure.
And what you thought was going to be a good thing ended up being a very controlling type of environment. Spent all the money, wasted the money, did all the things that you wouldn't expect them to do based upon the relationship that you had. But I think that's probably an early lesson on values conversations for those of us who, if you're going to have a partnership inside of a business, you've got to make sure that you guys have shared value systems, right? Do we have the same beliefs? Do we value the way we care about employees? Do we value our customer service the same way? Do we value our financials the same way? Like you've got to have, you don't have to be the same people, but you have to have similar values. If not, you're going to constantly bang against each other when you're in the business development phases. And as you continue to grow, you're going to continue to have problems. And somebody's going to get pissed enough to try to buy somebody else out, and you lose a relationship and potentially a business if it's not doing well.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you, you talk about, you know, quality versus quantity. And especially in healthcare, you know, quantity, because margins are low, payments are slow. That's kind of what I think from a business standpoint, we're so trained to know. How did you shake off the common thing, you know, the common challenges, why most people fall into this whole quantity thing and go down the path of quality?
Well, I think, you know, most of us don't go to school to be an entrepreneur. Right. I don't know a lot of colleges that offer entrepreneurship as a degree. Right. So In healthcare, it's the same thing. You go to school to learn how to provide a service that helps people, whether you're in physical rehabilitation, which is what my provider degree is in, is physical rehab, or you're a GI doc, or you're a derm, or you're an ortho, whatever it is, you learn how to treat patients. That's what you do. So if I'm seeing cuts in insurance reimbursements per patient, the only thing I know how to do is see more patients, because that's what I was taught to do. And so I get caught in this just constant minutia of, I got to see more patients. I got to see more patients. If I see more patients, I got to hire more people. I need more support staff, which means my margins are now less. I'm getting paid less and now I'm making less. Why the hell am I continuing to do this? And so I think that what the biggest thing that's missing inside of most healthcare entrepreneurship is an actual business mindset, right? Like, we didn't learn how to grow a business. We didn't learn how to build anything like that. And it was the same way. I didn't know what I didn't know. So I got into the middle of it and I said, I better figure this shit out, right? So you start reading books, start taking courses, you start trying different things, you learn from mentors. And that eventually is what took us off, right? But we were a cash pay practice as well. I didn't take insurance. So 80% of our revenue was from a cash pay model. Now, that line of thinking allowed us to see less patients, generate better revenue, have less headaches from insurance companies. Right. So that's a win-win-win for everybody across the board. Right. So I think from any, if you're looking at quantity versus quality, you have to answer those three questions. Is it good for cash flow? Right. Is it good for us as the business owners? And is it good for our patients? Right. Or our customers, if you will, if you're going to stretch this across multiple business platforms or verticals. Right. So you have to answer yes to those three questions in order for it to be a win-win-win.
Right. How do you know? So the cash pay makes total sense. Like, obviously, because then you don't have any AR and you're just getting all the money up front. It definitely helps cash flow. But how do you know the advantage of the insurance is obviously you get more patients. People just automatically come to you because they have a policy with that particular insurance company. And so you almost have like an instant infusion of business. How did you combat if you're cash pay only? Now you need to kind of find your own patients and clients. What was your strategy for that?
So just like any good business foundationally, and when you're doing your branding, you want to decide who is this business for, right? So we don't just put out a product or a service and just use the anybody, everybody model. If you've ever been a business owner that's done that, your business failed quickly, right? So we got to think, okay, if we're going to run a cash-based model, and our model was for orthopedics, we did stem cell-based therapy, regenerative medicine, PRP, bone marrow, that kind of stuff. We're in a chiropractic office for you guys listening and doing that. I don't condone that at all. We actually had a physician in-house that was specialized in non-surgical orthopedics. So doing that, running that model, we think, okay, who are we going to service? Not just demographically. Yeah, they need to live in a certain area and make a certain amount of money and all that, but what do they want, right? What is it that they're tired of inside of healthcare? And what do they actually want? They want better service. They want better outcomes. They want less medications. They don't want steroid injections. Like, they want a way to get better and heal without being cut on and without being forced to take more chemical solutions. So when you realize that's who you're talking to, then you craft every marketing message that you can that speaks directly to that person. right? Because you understand that they probably don't drive Toyotas. They probably drive higher end cars. They probably shop at Whole Foods. They probably have a personal trainer, right? You really just start diving into the niche of the person whom you are catering your services to. And then once you craft a familiar message that fits with them, it's only a matter of time before they start coming in. They start telling their friends, because if they live that life, they hang with other people that also live that life. And so it just took off.
Now, just building on that, your practice, it grew to seven figures and I believe it was 3 years, and you had like 50% growth per year. And this was all during COVID-19. Anything you can attribute to what it was like a snowball, and it seems like it was like gained steam really fast. Anything that you attribute that triggered that type of phenomenal growth?
Yeah. So let's build off of what I just said, right? So if you look, who were we catering our business to? These guys were small business owners themselves, executives. They lived in golf communities, tennis communities, right? These guys had cash on hand. And we pushed all of our marketing to households with greater than $250,000 of net revenue. So you think, okay, these guys aren't going to just stop their business. Right. That's not going to happen. COVID is not going to affect this group of people the same way. So if you really dive into the thought process of who your ideal customer is or consumer is, then you can really say, okay, well, while everybody else is retracting, we're going to find, even if I have to go work a side job to bring extra revenue in, we're going to push more money into marketing. And we did. And so everybody that was working at those, you know, senior level executive positions or C-suite or business owners, those guys didn't stop their businesses. They just moved everything remote. And now they had more time to take care of themselves because they weren't spending time in a car, going to an office or visiting people. Everything was done via Zoom. So these guys had more time to take care of their bodies. And being that we were the guys out there going, hey, we understand, you know, that the model is changing, but we're still open. Come see us. And boom. You know, we took off. We grew, like I said, 50% year over year from 2018 to 2019 to 2020, and then another almost 40% 2020 to 2021.
Wow, that's some crazy growth. What, as you were growing like that, so you're scaling your business, you're growing and scaling. What would you say is the biggest challenge in that? Like, what, anything catch you off guard? Anything not you weren't able to keep up with that type of growth rate?
I think it's more of the mindset of the unknown. Right? Like, are we going to dump all of this money in here just for it to not work? And then we're like every other business or a majority of them that have to close. Right. So I think it's your own mental state, your own. That's why I read so much. Why I take so many courses, because, you know, like if everybody's read Think and Grow Rich, the thing is think, right? It's how you think is what actually enables you to grow rich, if you will. So I think it's the mind screwing with you that is really the problem. Like, is this going to work? Is this going to work? Is this going to work? Right. I think that's the hardest part. I think the second hardest part is the word yes, right? So many people aren't ready for that. You know, if I have a product or a service and I do my due diligence and I market it correctly and a bunch of people say yes to me, I better be able to handle those yeses, right? I better be able to have the appointment slots in my office. I better have the equipment that I need on hand. My staff better be able to handle the influx of calls, which I think is a huge problem in healthcare in general. You know, you see a lot of these people who market the 60 leads in 60 days, or, you know, but you don't have a staff that can handle that many calls if they even come in. If they're actually qualified leads, your staff doesn't know how to handle that influx of calls. So that was a part of the preparation, right? Hey, if we're going to get an influx of calls, let's make sure that we are, you know, the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted when it comes to how we handle our calls, how we take our information, how soon we get these people on the schedule. Let's make sure that we're not over, it's COVID. So let's make sure that we're not putting too many people in our office at the same time. Let's face them out. There's all these logistical things that you had to be take into account as a medical practice. Then if anybody in your business got sick with COVID, then you had to test everyone, right? So you had to be really, really, again, problem solution oriented if any of that stuff came into pass. And so we had a lot of meetings and said, what are we going to do? Put a lot of SOPs in place to handle that if indeed there was an issue. So
if you're a business owner feeling stuck in your business, overwhelmed, responsible for everything that happens, and working long hours, Tyler helps his clients develop processes, hire high-performing team members, and better understand their financial metrics and numbers to allow for a more predictable, less hands-on business. To schedule a free, no-pressure consultation, head to thinktyler.com and click the meeting button. Tyler would love to see if he can help you work on your business, not in your business. Schedule a consultation today at thinktyler.com. Think life, think success, think business.
And so we had a lot of meetings and said, what are we going to do? Put a lot of SOPs in place to handle that if indeed there was an issue. So,
but these issues you're bringing up in terms of dealing with the growth, the processes, the systems, the SOPs, I mean, they're really applicable to any business that's growing at a rapid rate. I mean, you just kind of need to think through and be ready for. Sounds like you guys handled it really well. How about from a staff standpoint? Did you have any challenges being able to scale your staff and get qualified people? Or is that in your area a relatively easy thing?
Yeah, it's as a healthcare professional, what you see a lot inside of healthcare is that people want to hire on it based on experience, right? If you've worked in a healthcare office before, you know how to answer a phone and schedule an appointment or verify insurance, you're welcome here. Garbage. I hired nobody that had a prior healthcare background. Nobody. My office manager was a salesperson, got a cash pay practice, had to have salespeople, had to have people that knew how to do it, right? My front desk person was a prior teacher. Who better to handle disgruntled or complaints or frustrating people than someone has to deal with parents, right? So, you know, you hire people based upon personality and you can teach them skills. You can teach people how to run a medical record system or about insurances. You can teach them that, but I can't teach them their personality.
Yeah.
And so we do our due diligence in hiring the right personalities to fit. Now, that was something we learned because when we started, we didn't do that. We hired based upon your ability to work in a doctor's office, and it failed miserably multiple times until I finally said, you know what, let's stop hiring based upon resumes and let's start hiring people based upon who they are and their fit to the type of business that we run. We'll teach them the rest. And that's when we finally hit the right. And when you had those people, you didn't have to hire anybody else because they knew what the hell they were doing. And they were structured and they were on pace. I had two office staff and I had a medical assistant, the doctor, and myself. That's it. Running a 7-figure business. So all these doctor's offices out there that have 10, 12 employees to support one or two doctors or one doctor in a mid-level, you guys are killing your expenses, killing it. Like it's not how you're supposed to run a business.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we talked a little bit earlier, I was trying to pull out of you, were there any type of challenges, failures, or things that didn't quite work out? And it was along lines of cash flow is one that came up that we thought might be applicable. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because it sounds like overall, you have a fabulous story. But like everybody, there's bumps in the roads occasionally. It sounded like you had at least this one.
Yeah, when we first started, you know, you get your business loan and you open up, you buy all your equipment that you need, you hire your staff, you do your marketing and all the things. But it's just like any other business, just because you build it doesn't mean people are going to come to it, right? You got to go tell them, you got to go get them. So in the early on, you know, your expense rate is really high and compared to the cash that's coming in. And so there was a moment where we had some stuff that just hadn't cleared. So the checks were on the way, but they hadn't cleared the bank account. And I had payroll that was about to go out and no cash to cover it.
Yikes.
And so I had to call. I remember this standing, my business partner and I standing in the office, and I was like, So I called my mom and I was like, hey, can you send me some scratch just so I can cover payroll? I'll give it back to you like next week. I'm waiting on all this stuff to clear. The checks haven't cleared. We don't have the cash flow. I need to pay my team. If not, I'm not going to have a team. And so she did. So she came in and saved the day for us in that moment. But that's a defining moment where you just, you know, can I let go of my pride enough to say, hey, I need help? One. And then two, can I figure out what the solution is for the future and what I need to do so I'm never in this situation again? Now, granted, that was like in the first year of business, right? Maybe in the first 18 months, you know, so where you're still gaining ground, you're still growing, you're still marketing, you're still trying to bring people in on a consistent basis, you know? So that's the time when that happened. But up from there, it was just like, okay, you know, we really do have to dive more into the marketing game here. We really do have to consider how we get more cash coming into our business so that this doesn't happen. I don't want to be staring at doing the balance banking every pay period, right? Going, do we have enough to pay this bill? I don't want to pay that one. Let's wait. Let's pay this one. And then next week we'll pay that one. Like that was a defining moment where I was like, all right, we're going to do better. We're going to figure out different systems. And we did. We put them into play, a couple trial and errors, found the things that work, and then just took off.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That is definitely, though, when it comes to payroll in particular. I mean, not being able to pay any of the bills is traumatic, but payroll, I think, cuts the deepest because it's like, you know, one, you'd have to look at your employees in the eyes and say, hey, payroll's not coming. And then two, you know, they're the people that also support you too. So that's mm-hmm. a tough one. That is a good, a great story, though, that of, you know, it's just a tribute that when you hit bumps in the road and then you end up on the other side, which is where I want to go now, is you ultimately exited this business, correct?
Yeah, we did last year, September of 2023.
Talk to me about that, because you just said you're now, did you have a lot more staff once you sold, or was it still a relatively small group?
Nope, just five of us.
Wow, that's so small. What did that look like? How did you sell so fast? Because that's really a short time frame. And was that the plan all along, or did it kind of come out of nowhere?
Well, it was 6 years. We owned that business for 6 years. And there was one or two options.
Yeah.
If we're going to keep it and keep it rolling, then the next option would be, let's open another location, right? So let's expand it. Because you were going to tap out the way that our system was, and just having one doctor on hand, you were going to tap out at probably $2.5 million in revenue a year. The facility couldn't hold it any more than that. So you were going to have to expand it. So you were going to have to open a second location, or you were going to have to move locations. And so that was on the table, but the economy was such garbage in, you know, 21 and 22, as far as costs for anything, right? Like inflation was so high. If you were going to open another practice, take another loan out, was going to be insane. You know, price per square foot anywhere, where, because you can't put cash pay practice. So you can't put it just anywhere. You've got to demographically put it in a place where it can be supported by the people that are there, which means, you know, $40, $45, $50 a square foot in some of these areas. It's like, yeah. So that was one option. We could do that. Or we could sit back and just say, okay, we've done it. We built it. We went from zero to this. It's doing well. Do we want to sell it and move on to another, you know, business ventures that we want to do? You know, which one? And so we said, well, let's put it on the market and just see what happens. And we just happened to get a decent, we got a couple, you know, low balls like you always get. But then we got a really good offer from two doctors who took it. And, you know, it's been, 6 months now, and they have their own idea and their own vision, which I think is great. You know, there's a certain point where your vision for the business just kind of remains status quo, right? And you get other people in there that can take it over, and then they see something very different, and they can take it to a different level, or they can do something different with it that you didn't see. And so while it was great to have built it and sold it, and it hurt a little bit when you sold it, because it was like, oh, you know, this is my baby. This is a thing that I built from nothing. It also is cool to see somebody else take it and transform it into a different vision and continue to grow it in a different way. It still supports the non-surgical world of orthopedics, but it's also moved heavy into the aesthetic world as well now too. So
very cool. So what did that deal look like? Was that like all cash? You basically just sold the practice? Did you take an earnout? How was it structured for you guys?
Yeah, no, it was a all cash offer. They got their own.
Wow.
And they paid us, you know, right out of the gate. You know, of course, you got to pay off whatever's left on your loans, sure, and any liens and things like, sure, that. But sure. Yeah. They paid us, yeah, all cash out. So I was like, okay, sounds good. So now 6 months later, I'm like, what's the next thing? You know, do I want to build another one of these brick and mortars? I'm like, probably not, but I want to help other people do that. I want to help others have that success.
Yeah, that's an awesome accomplishment. I mean, being able to build something and sell it, I've been blessed to go through that a couple times. And it's just such a cool feeling, because it just is such good. And you're right, there is a bittersweet. I mean, it's like giving up your baby, but it's also very cool because it's like this whole cycle of someone saw value in what you built. So congrats on doing that.
Thanks. Yeah, that was quite the experience for sure. Yeah.
So I got a couple more for you. I wanted to talk about work-life balance. Do you have any tips, tricks, anything that you handled as you were growing a business really fast, and how you kept your sanity? Is it like flying off cliffs, or I know you're.
Yeah. I think that the word that you're actually looking for there, or most of us as business, not you as you, Tyler, sure, Barton, sure, but business owners in general, is opportunity costs. I think that's the phrase there. I think work-life balance is not a real thing. I think it's just a mantra for people to be able to say something that makes them feel better about the fact that they are working so much they don't get to do the things that they want to do. But I think you have to view everything in your business as an opportunity cost, right? Whether that's a financial opportunity cost or a time opportunity cost. I'm not willing to give up time with my son as a single dad, right, to work on my business. I'm just not, right? I'm not willing to go to his baseball games and be emailing and taking phone calls and texts and all that. I'm not willing to do that. It's an opportunity cost. So you have to decide, you know, what's the most important thing to you when you're building a business? And if you spend 60, 70, 80 hours a week, which is not unnecessary, right? There are times when you have to do, you know, you got to do hood rat shit, right? You got to wear all the hats. You got to pound the pavement. You got to do the things, but you can't live in that mode. You can't stay there forever because you are costing family, friends, other relationships when you do that just for the success of your business. You have to decide what is the most important thing to you, right? And what is the opportunity that you're giving up in order to do that thing? And is it worth it? You know? So, and everybody has a value system attached to that, right? I value time with my family more than I value spending it in front of a computer, sending emails, or doing the next marketing thing.
That's great. So it sounds like you are grounded and you're well-rounded. You prioritize for enjoying your life.
I think you have to.
Yeah.
It's easy to get sucked in.
It is.
What sucks you in is the idea of success. It's not necessarily the success. It's the idea of it. And if I put more into what I'm doing, I will be successful. And that's not always true. What is true is that do the things that you're good at and that you're efficient at. And if you are not good at it, you're not efficient at it, find a system or pay somebody else to do it so you're not wasting time trying to figure it out, right? You need to live in the world as a business owner where you're efficient and you're good at what you do. And if you're good and you're efficient at it, you probably like it, right? So like me, I can build a website. I'm not really efficient at it.
Sure.
Right? I can do it. And it's not one of my favorite things, but I'm not efficient. So I would hire somebody else to do that, right? Why am I spending 3-4 weeks trying to figure out what somebody else can do in 3 or 4 days? Right? That's stupid to me, right? That's just a dumb business decision. So when you look at it that way, how are you doing or employing people or systems to be able to add to your overall business growth so that you're not the guy doing all the things all of the time, right? And that makes 4 grand differences in your enjoyment of life.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Hey, before you wrap up, I want to talk about what you're doing today. You have a book, Uneffing Private Healthcare, the playbook on owning your dream practice. So first, who is that book for? Is that for any type of healthcare provider? I mean, like if in pretty much in any discipline, and then also what you're doing today, I'd love to talk about.
Sure. Yeah. So that book is geared towards kind of I would say it's the foundational premise. It's 10 chapters worth of these are the foundational things that you need to consider when you're building a business. So even if you're 5-6 years in and you find yourself like, why have I plateaued? You can get some good use out of it. But for sure, if you're planning on starting a business, it is for you. And if you do it correctly, following what I put in that book, you will have pretty good success, right? If you don't and you haven't done those foundational things, then you're going to have to hire somebody like me later to help you fix it, which is usually more costly than doing it right from the beginning, right? So, but yeah, I noticed, you know, back in, I would say probably 2019, even into 2020, when we were growing so much, people were asking me like, hey, you know, what are you guys doing? That is like, you see you guys everywhere. Your marketing's everywhere. It seems like you're crushing it. Like the message is on point. Like you guys seem like you're killing it. And I'm like, yeah, we've done pretty well so far. And they said, well, you know, can you tell me how you did XYZ? And I would explain it and they would look at me like I had 7 heads. And I'm like, you don't understand anything that I'm saying. And that's when it clicked in my mind that they're good at being providers. They're not good at running businesses around that specialty. And so I'm like, you know, there's definitely something missing here. There's a healthcare business university thing that's just missing. And so that's when I decided to write the book. And I started late 2019 helping just on the side some other private practices that I had previous relationships with, you know, have similar success. And as our practice grew and started doing really, really well, it required less of my time because we put more systems and more things in place. That's the essence of being an entrepreneur, right? If you're an entrepreneur, you want to own a business, not a job, right? Most healthcare providers own a job inside of their business. So I stepped into having less to do with the daily stuff of my practice and more to do with how do I help healthcare in general, particularly small practices and small businesses that are private, non-hospital based, really grow, because that's where people want to go. Nobody wants to go to a hospital for treatment, right? You don't want to go to a hospital to see your doctor. You want to go to a private office, right? Nobody likes going to a hospital. So how do we help these guys really be successful in a world that's really driving them to either sell or be part of a hospital system? So that's what I started doing. Just where I've done, you know, anything from physical rehabilitation, orthopedics, dermatology. I've done mental health facilities, a lot of different types of you know, owner providers inside of healthcare that just really want to run a successful business and want to learn how to do that. And it's been a lot of fun to work with those people who really are interested in the business mindset and what it takes to be successful as a business owner.
Yeah, that's very cool. Then you also do some speaking, is that correct?
I do. I was fortunate enough to be voted by Insight Care Magazine, which is a pretty large magazine in the medical universe, the most influential keynote speaker of 2023. So that came out last year. So that was a quite kind of cool thing to be part of, to be featured as. And I enjoy that. I enjoy the education part, right? So I feel like growth is a big part of me. So if I can help other people learn, if I can teach them, if they can grow as people and as business owners, then I feel like I've had some impact somewhere within this industry.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. iBridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com. I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
So if I can help other people learn, if I can teach them, if they can grow as people and as business owners, then I feel like I've had some impact somewhere within this industry.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, congrats on that's quite an accomplishment to get influential speaker. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And then your website, DanielTribbyOfficial.com. And Tribby is T-R-I-B-B-Y. I'll also, of course, put it in the show notes at thinktyler.com. Hey, Daniel, did I leave anything else out? If people want to reach out to you, is there anywhere else you want them to go?
No, that's perfect. You can get a hold of me at the website. You can, you know, book for speaking engagements, or you can even set up a call if you want to talk practice or business growth type of stuff. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me for sure.
And then also put the link, the book they can get on Amazon or whatever bookstore they prefer.
That's on the website too.
You can find it. Okay, cool. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you being on the show, and I love hearing your story. It's great to see how much success you've had, and you've shared a lot of tidbits of wisdom. So thank you.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Tyler. I appreciate you having me on, man. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, take care.
That's all for this episode of Think Business with Tyler. But we have plenty more resources to help you in your pursuit of business excellence on our website at thinktyler.com. If you'd like to be featured in a future episode of the show, feel free to reach out to us on social media at think_Tyler. We look forward to helping you think life, think success, and think business.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electricast production.
See you there.
Electricast.